Well, g'day, Martin. Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of Infection Control Matters. We're having another chinwag about the ECCMED conference.
Yeah.
And we've just listened to the top infection control papers for the last 12 months presented, and we're just going to provide a bit of a summary of just Stefan Harbath's first critique of the best papers in this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to stress is that it is a critique. You know, yeah. Stefan presents a paper, but he also critiques it very nicely as well, because there's no paper that doesn't have a limitation. So that's why I always enjoy listening to Stefan's critiques of, you know, what are good papers.
Yeah. And,
but he does restrict himself in the journals he looks at, doesn't he?
Yes. So he set himself some specific criteria, and that's included being published in a top medical journal. So these were the New England journals, the JAMAs, the Lancets related IPC papers.
Interestingly, because a few years ago he wouldn't have very much to talk about.
There's a lot more these days.
There's a lot more getting in the high quality journals.
Yeah, yeah.
But it does, however, rule out infection control and hospital epidemiology, yeah. Journal of Hospital Infection, Disease and Health.
Yeah. AGIC.
You know, which generally would be my go-to place to find good IPC-related papers.
Did you say that?
No, I didn't say Eric. I said IDH. But
IDH, yeah, good journal, that one.
conflict alert on that one.
Conflict alert, yep. You're right. So it does limit, but that's fine for the purpose. That was his criteria. So.
Yeah.
So there's a few papers there. The first one we actually talked about on this podcast last year, and I think it was our top paper when we did the Christmas special last year.
Yeah. So Eileen Wolpensberger and Hiro Sachs's implementation study.
Yeah.
And Lauren Clack and colleagues in Switzerland. Yeah.
Yes, on prevention of non-ventilator-associated hospital-acquired pneumonia. So we won't go into that again, because if you're interested in that, you can go look at our podcast. But that was Stefan's first paper. I suspect he spent the most time on that too, so I got the impression he really liked that paper.
Yeah, I mean, we really like that paper as well. We've picked it amongst our top papers. I've got a sneaking suspicion it's going to be in my top papers when I talk about it at the APSIC meeting. But he made the point that the areas that implemented the best got the biggest reductions. You know?
Yes.
Who knew?
Yes.
Things work if you do them.
Yes, that's right. That was a good point that he raised. And yeah, like all the papers, he also highlights some more limitations.
Yeah.
And not being randomised single-centred and various other things.
Yeah.
We talked about that one before. I think there was a paper from Susan Huang.
Two from Susan, that's right.
Yep. So one was in nursing homes.
First one was universal decolonisation in nursing homes.
So the universal decolonisation was?
Chlorhexidine and mupirocin.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
Chlorhexidine bathing.
Yeah, chlorhexidine bathing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the two outcome measures were all-cause infections and transfer to hospitals.
Mm. And I actually like that idea of having an outcome, because it's very hard to get studies where you power them properly when they've got an infection as an outcome. But it's a meaningful outcome. I think it was transferred to hospital because of an infection.
Yes.
And I thought that was a clever way
because that's really what you're trying to stop.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what you're trying to stop in that setting in particular.
Ooh. So, in both cases, they got significant reductions. But Stefan went on to make the point that, you know,
significant reductions with...
In reductions in hospital transfers.
Yes, in the intervention.
But Stefan made the point that they started off with the really high levels of MDRO colonization in these areas anyway.
Yeah. This is North America, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in North America. And very high numbers of infections and transfers into hospitals.
Yeah.
Which, okay, it gives you a great opportunity to show a reduction, because if you're starting off a really low baseline, you're going to have to study it for a long time to show a difference. Whereas here, they could do it within a reasonable time period. I get that. But, of course, it does mean that it may be quite specific to North America.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Whoever's in a nursing home in North America, I've seen papers showing VAP and CLABSI rates from nursing homes.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
In the UK, you would never see that. There'd be nobody on a ventilator. Not even would have a peripheral cannula in that central line. So I suspect the makeup of the people in these longer-term care institutions in America is somewhat different to the rest of the world.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And this is the trick as well with all the studies, actually just thinking about, we've talked about this before on the podcast, about studies that have looked at contact precautions.
Yeah.
A lot of those have been done in hospitals that have high proportion of single rooms in their hospitals. So, yeah, context is critically important. So I think he was calling for this type of study to be done in Europe or somewhere outside of North America to see whether those results hold true.
Yeah. And the other study of Susan Wang's he talked about was the meparisin versus nasal iodophore.
Yes.
And shown that meparisin is superior to an antiseptic going up a nose. So,
yes.
You know, I think there's a take-home message there as well, in that people are trying various different antiseptic treatments for nasal decolonization. None of them seem to work as well as meparisin.
And that was kind of one of his concluding thoughts about the papers he presented, was that perhaps antiseptics for the nose are just not going to cut the mustard when it comes to decolonization.
Not at the moment, no.
Yeah.
You do wonder if that's on the preparation, though, because meparisin may stay active for a little bit longer in the nose, whereas many antiseptics are a one hit and no residual action.
Yeah.
Whereas meparisin may work for a slightly longer period of time.
Mm. And I think the other one...
Maybe they penetrate bogies better than topical antiseptics.
The other paper I think we were going to mention, I mean, he mentioned a fair few more, so we're not going to go into all them, but was it one about hand hygiene?
Oh, yeah, the automated hand hygiene monitoring.
Mm.
I thought that was quite interesting because this is actually individualising the performance, and you don't often see, I mean, people often shy away from that because they don't want to upset the staff, and they don't want the staff to know we're monitoring them individually, but they did manage to do that.
Yeah.
And they showed quite a difference in hand hygiene behaviour of individual staff members who are consistently either above or below the mean. And he talked about overperforming and underperforming.
In the nurses' group, wasn't
it? In the nurses' group. And his idea of overperforming was higher than the average, which was, to see if I can remember, it was 50%.
Yeah.
So if you're overperforming if you do it more than 50% of the time. And, you know, the highest performers were averaging around 80%. Mm.
Would you say 50% is a high performer?
Well, given that in the UK, hand hygiene audits show that everyone's compliant to a level of 98%, that means everybody in this study is underperforming, which is clearly not correct. It's an interesting way to set a bar, though.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, he made the point that this gives you a starting point for giving individualised, personalised feedback. Mm, which, to be honest, I've always thought, if you could do that in a non-punitive way... I remember I gave a talk to the Hong Kong Infection Control Nurses Association years ago, and they said, what is the future of hand hygiene monitoring? And I said, my perfect system would be where at the end of the shift, you hand in your badge or something like that, which has been monitoring you, and you get an immediate printout. Your compliance today has been such and such.
Yeah.
Everybody else's has been such and such.
Mm.
You've mostly been dealing with patient X. Your hand hygiene is the worst when handling patient X. Patient has an infection.
Mm.
Could you have had something to do with it? And only the nurse gets that.
Yeah.
And the nurse can walk off the ward looking at this thinking, maybe I could do better.
Mm.
As opposed to it going up the organisation where they start kicking people all the way down and say, your personal hand hygiene isn't good enough. Because I've always thought, you know, I'm sure half the time people don't realise they're not doing it as often as they do. I mean, people always overestimate the number of times they decontaminate hands.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, personalised feedback to a person very promptly afterwards, not like a month ago.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the audience have had...
Yeah, they're agreeing with us here, man. Yeah.
You know, if there was...
There's a round of applause for us.
Non-punitive way of handing back that information, I'd love to see the effect of that on behaviour.
Yeah, that's true. Now, actually, there are two other quick ones I think I wanted to mention about from Stefan's presentation too. One was Trish Peel's study comparing... it was the addition of vancomycin to cephalosporin or cephalosin? And... seeing whether prophylactically that reduced surgical site infections. Beautiful study. In fact, I think that was one of his favourite methodological studies, the way he talked about it.
It was.
And we've talked about it on the podcast as well, so we won't go into detail again about that one. But it was, I think the point there was, you know, if you use the logic, you would go, okay, so you're going to give someone one antibiotic for prophylaxis, and if you're going to give them two, for example, adding vancomycin, the logical person would say, well, that's got to make things better. But in fact, it made things worse.
Yes.
And so I think...
I'd love to know why.
I'd love to know why, yes. I think the interesting point he was making is we shouldn't assume...
No.
...in infection control. There might be some sensible logic to what we're doing and might be theoretically based.
Yeah.
And we can justify it, but we should be prepared to be wrong.
Yes.
Because that was an example of no one predicting, I suspect, that kind of result.
No. Gut feeling isn't always correct.
Yeah, yeah. Or even those with, you know, he said, look, if you'd asked infectious diseases physicians what they thought before the study, most of them would have said, it might show no difference, perhaps, or might have shown an improvement, not the opposite.
No.
So, you know, that just shows you've got to be prepared to be wrong. And this is why you have to have well-designed trials to answer these types of questions.
And one little point about that one is it was in a low MRSA prevalent area.
Yes, yes.
And so if you've got a high level of prevalence, then it may have had more of an effect.
That's right. The benefit of vancomycin might be that.
Yeah. Maybe, but that's just my gut feeling. Which maybe could be wrong.
The other one was the use of chlorhexidine with alcohol versus iodine with alcohol for surgical site
prep. Prep, yeah. So they would. It was... fixation of fracture, open and closed.
Mm.
That was quite interesting because in the closed fractures, the iodine seemed to be superior.
Yes.
And in the open fractures...
No difference, is it?
No.
Yeah.
Mm. But I suspect that's because the iodine possibly is pretty good at getting rid of your own endogenous flora, whereas if you've got an open fracture, you've probably got half the road or wherever you fail, or you know, you've got a lot of introduced organisms into that area. Which maybe it won't be quite as good at. I don't know. That's a guess. But
and of course, there's a big difference between clean surgeries and dirty surgeries.
Absolutely.
And
yeah. You know, and how long after the compound fracture did your surgery get performed? So how many organisms grabbed colonize an area?
Yeah.
You know, if it's like within minutes, fine. But it won't be. It'll be hours and or even days after the event.
Mm.
So it's you probably got a completely different flora there you're trying to deal with, where possibly the chlorhexidine may have been more effective, although in this particular case that preparation of iodine did have some residual effect. It did seem to hang around longer, which is, you know, not the case with normal iodine skin preps.
That's right, it was a particular type of iodine.
It was.
So look, we'll put these papers as best as we can recall them on the Infection Control Matters website, so you can have a look at yourselves.
Okay.
So that's a quick synopsis, I guess, of some of the papers that were presented in the top papers of the year for infection control at ECCMED.
Yeah, good session as ever.
Good session as ever, indeed. And look, the crowd are calling us fun, so we better get back.
Okay.
Bye-bye, everyone.